Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Kane and Bucks.
Oh yeah, it's a very good morning if you're waking up to us this morning. You're with Kane and Bucks on SEN Breakfast. Sydney coach John Longmire is going to join us. The buck stops here in a matter of moments. Questions without notice and your calls as well. We'd love for you to get involved. And a lot of people having their say on the booing of Jason Horne-Francis at the footy. The head knocks, is the bump dead? We'll put all of that on the agenda for questions without notice a little bit later on. And what should Nathan Buckley's song be if he kicks a goal? And should the AFL players each have their own songs? Because I love what Charlie Cameron has done. And now Josh Rochelle at Adelaide. Bucks is here and he's fired up. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Kane. Yeah, we're going to jump into Buck Stops here now. And I want to kick off with heart and soul players. We saw Brisbane take on Melbourne. Max Gawn went down, but Dane Zorko came back. And I just think that that's something that we love to see in our own teams, and it's something we saw on the weekend.
Yeah, well, clearly there's an emotional toll to your team when you lose your skipper that early in the game.
Yeah, it was pretty grim, obviously, the scoreline as well. I had a bit of time down the rooms by myself in that first quarter, and you know, I've had good news scans before, and I've had some bad ones, so I'm just hoping I get one of the good ones.
I think that it's very early in the season, so you can get good performances and bad, and the swings and the highs and lows are considerable, and Brisbane's were. Their first round was really poor. Their second round was excellent. And maybe it coincides with the return of a Dane Zorko, who I believe is a heart and soul player for Brisbane, and he was excellent. But there was no doubt that the Melbourne team was affected by the worst scenario, possible scenario of Max Gawn. The look on his face, the look on his on the interchange bench at the end of the first quarter, Mark Williams,
even Choco was players. Flat. What was it? You can't shut him up, and even he didn't look like he was up and about.
Well, he was sitting back in the dugouts, and he was flat as the coach looked flat. Like there was a general malaise across the Demons players, and when you're so invested in those guys, I think it does have an effect. So I think we saw that to some extent. So who are yours? And keep an eye on those going forward.
Just on Zorko, he did an interview with Triple M pre-game, and I was really fascinated by what he had to say.
I've done a lot of work on my psychological stuff over the pre-season and late last year, so I'm pretty confident whatever they choose to throw at me tonight, if that may be their attack, I'll be well equipped to handle it.
It's good insight.
Yeah, and just quickly on that, the more I go on, the more I wonder if you try and dumb down these irregular and sharp edges of your personality and of your psyche, do you actually take away what makes you great? So Dane Zorko has carried this, you know, like a chip on his shoulder throughout his whole career, and he's been very successful from it. And every now and then he steps over the line. But I don't want him to smooth his rough edges out, because I think we get the best out of him. And I think it's true of all of us. We've got to, you know, embrace our imperfections at some. But it's good to see that he's prepared to work on it, and hopefully it just continues to become a strength. In the same vein, my second point is that I think Geelong will be okay. I don't think that there's any reason to panic, and I don't think their coach is either.
Here's Chris Scott.
I don't really think there's much merit in sort of going back 12 months ago, because it's we were different then, and we knew we'd been deliberately different. I get that negative momentum can kind of throw you off the rails a little bit, but we're miles away from that. So I thought we were a work in progress midway, three quarters of the way through last year as well.
And that is accurate, and it's a reality that not everyone considers, given that they were so brilliant at the end of the year. The year before that, Melbourne were a work in progress three quarters of the way through the year before they ultimately won the flag.
Does it mean, though, that you still ask questions about, like, when you say they're going to be okay, do you sweep that under the carpet and just go, it'll turn, we'll be okay? Or
no,
would they
don't
be concerned about because they do look slow through the midfield. They got some players that aren't impacting like they were last year, clearly. I don't think they're anywhere near as hungry as what they were towards the back end of the last year, where they were smashing teams and beating up on teams.
Correct.
And defensively, they were really strong. Now they're not, but you're right, because they've got Gold Coast, Hawthorn, West Coast the next three. They're going to be 3-2, and in 3 weeks' time, we're going to be not talking that much about Geelong. But it's not to say there aren't a few deficiencies in the game.
Go and play at home, talking about negative momentum and positive momentum in games is huge. Momentum in season is huge. I think Geelong have a competitive advantage being able to go down. They're one of the few. They're the only Victorian club with a home ground advantage, largely. So they do get that. They've taken a full toll on that. But the point being about their heart and soul players, there's no Joel Selwood there. And I think Tom Stewart is probably their next heart and soul guy that just holds them together, the glue out the back, probably with Cam Guthrie. I don't think Dangerfield, even though he's their skipper, I don't think he's a heart and soul player for them. So they're still working out what life after Joel Selwood's going to be. And I reckon they've lost the next guy in Tom Stewart who draws them together like that. So there's a bit of a dynamic bit of growth that needs to happen there as well. And that's not guaranteed, but I believe that in good organisations in their capacity to get that done. Talking about growth and connection and finding the most of what you've got, the Saints have been huge. Ross Lyon's imprint is really clear, but it's their... And the defensive numbers jump off the page.
Through the roof.
They've only had 7 goals kicked against them from turnover in 2 games, which you expected. But what we didn't expect was how effective their front six has been. And they've been, brilliant the first 2 weeks.
I'm not sure what expectation I had. I have trying to build up my understanding of the group and the capacity. There's no doubt we've got theoretical first-choice players out, particularly out of our front half. But in saying that, anything's possible, and if we'll convince that the 23 that we're picking were match feared and rock hard feared and knew how we wanted to play. So, look, it's a game of competition. The game's in good shape for winning contested ball and ground ball, and we do that pretty well.
I think this is part of his DNA. Theoretical first choice players. Like, how good is that? And that means that everyone has them in their best 22 when we put up a best 22 the St Kilda list. But so yes, Max King is that, and Tim Membry is that, and Jack Higgins is that and was that in the first 6, 7, 8 games of 2022. St Kilda's forward efficiency was through the roof. Those three blokes, King, Membry and Higgins, when the ball went to them, they were in the top 10 for scoring goals from being targeted inside 50. Philippou wasn't on a list that time last year. And he's in 2 games, he stood up, he's kicked three goals in the weekend. Caminiti wasn't on a list. And he wasn't on a list until a couple of months ago. Cordy had never played forward. And he kicked 2 goals. And Gresham, they're getting the best out of. So,
is it sustainable? Is this style sustainable?
With attitude, with high attitude and effort and intensity, and Ross talks about that flat out. So he coaches that flat out. Yes, it is.
But is it unrealistic? And we've seen even Brisbane in round one, when they were a fraction off, they got smashed. How do you replicate that for such a long season? So my fear for St Kilda is, and it's a glass half empty approach on what should be full, because what they've done is extraordinary. But, and I see it a little bit with Adelaide. I admire greatly how Adelaide play, but they struggle to do it for 4 quarters because of the taxing nature of the way that is to win. At some point, they're going to have to find another way to win, and that would be my fear for Ross and the Saints.
Well, the reason it's sustainable for Ross is because it will always be built on solid defence. And they're not actually relying on that high-pressure game that has been his DNA. They're 9th for pressure differential. So they're not putting over-the-top pressure on the opposition, and they're absorbing it pretty well. It's just their really solid defensive profile. They've got players that have a dip. And St Kilda have traditionally been a side, even under Alan Richardson and Brett Ratton, quite high pressure, high intensity side. They're great runners, apparently. So that's coming to the fore. But, it's unconventional, but it's heading in
Essendon
the right direction.
This week, good game.
Well, yeah, that because they've Great been game. They've been excellent as well. The next one I want to talk about is a new position in footy. We talk about quarterbacks all the time and blokes that set up the play, but it's specifically the sixth defender that plays closest to the midfield. I think that this position is redefining in modern footy and the way that we're seeing the attack control defence in the early stages of this year and last year. And I think that we're seeing this position and the person who plays this be so important in any team's makeup.
I don't know if I dare Ken to do it, but reality is, Nick's a great player, like an emerging talent, isn't he? So, we're going to embrace it. I said to Nick on Friday, I said, mate, this is probably coming. And we got all the things we worked through. He got tagged in a practice game, learnt so much from it. We want to support him as a team. Reality was in the first quarter, he's getting tagged and the scoreboard was still ticking over in our favour. So I said to Nick before the game, again yesterday, if this happens, the scoreboard's ticking over, you just got to fight your own battle, mate, but we'll support you through that. But he's got an incredible ability to play multiple roles, which makes it hard to tag.
Probably should have referenced Nick Dacos going into that grab, but he is one of the players that I reckon is doing it. I reckon it started, we were talking about Bevo and his bona fides as a coach. I think it started with Matthew Boyd, who needed to work out of the midfield, and he played as that aggressive sixth defender off back of stoppage.
Did it start before that? I remember having to tag Andrew McLeod as a defensive half forward, and McLeod went to half back, and he was doing that. And this was sort of early 2000s, 07, 08-ish era.
So well, there's always been attacking defenders. But
is this defender worrying? So has the change been that this defender is not really even worrying about an opponent?
That's the thing. I think he's just another midfielder.
Yeah.
And I think that Matty Boy did it. Caleb Daniel was another that basically ran away from his opponent, let him in like behind him, and he would go up to stoppage. So I think they were the two that did it. I think Jack Chris was one that came through. Burn Jones for Port was one. Jake Lloyd for Sydney. He's really aggressive. Lockie Whitfield, get the ball in their hands and use it off the back, but also basically become another midfielder. But what Collingwood are doing with Nick Dacos or Jack Chris or Scott Pendlebury's even playing that role periodically, it's just another midfielder.
Mm.
And they're backing their back five behind them to really get the job done. Sheasel's been played in that role for North in some shape or form. Sinclair's always played it for St Kilda. And I think we saw late last night with a shift in plan from West Coast Eagles, Jermaine Jones was a player that played that role. I'm running aggressively off the back.
So if your team doesn't have one, and you mentioned Burn Jones, but I'm really not... He's not really playing the role as effectively as the others. You're at a big.
He's not as skillful, but he's a hard-nosed ball winner.
He might be playing that role, but he's not doing it as effectively as the other names. If you don't have a player playing that role, you're at a significant disadvantage.
I believe so. Yeah. And if you don't, if you can't create a player there and a structure that supports his aggressive intent, so I think that Adam Saad for Carlton should be released from defending and actually put into this role. I think it would help Carlton even more to be to give their forward half even more access. And Saad potentially didn't have the tank for it two or three years ago, but I reckon he might
now. We might ask John Longmire about that because Nick Blakey has all the weapons to be the best at it with Nick Dacos in the game, I reckon.
Well, and the other thing is you can't rely on one. You sort of, if you've got three or four or five blokes that are bouncing off, well, then that bloke's even more dangerous. The last one I want to go to is just the performance of the North Melbourne in and under midfielder, one of the most influential players over the last 12 games in terms of stats and impact, and that's Luke Davies-Uniacke.
Oh, just so pleased for the players. They've put in a lot of work and... been smacked around as a footy club the last couple of years, so to win on the road against a really good side, and they came at us really hard in the second half with 40,000 spectators just cheering them on. It's like they got an extra man, so for us to hold on in those circumstances, it was just frantic stuff in that last couple of minutes.
So Clarko's wrapped. Like they've done what Collingwood have. The first two games, less than a goal, wins, won the close ones, and we'll talk more about that last kick at some point. But LDU's performances have been through the roof, and this is a kid who, 2 years ago, the club were working out how they were going to get the best out of him. He was not performing well in the twos, and there was thoughts that they had a bust on their hands with an early selection.
They thought LDU might be a bust.
Yeah, and it was around his anxieties. It was around his expectations on himself, his capacity to actually become the professional, or understand what he needed to do as a professional to then be able to go and make the most of his talent. And there's no guarantee that players get through that, and players come through it at different rates if they do. So it might be mental and emotional maturity as much as it is physical maturity, but clearly it's all come together for this kid, and North Melbourne are the beneficiaries of it, and it's all credit to him and them for being patient enough and working through the hardship to be able to get to this point. His first two games, so he's had 30 touches each of the first two rounds. He's an equal handball and kicker because his contested work inside is so good. He's had 10 clearances and 11 clearances. Mm. He's had 5 tackles and 6 tackles. So he gets to work in the harder elements of the game.
6 goals.
He's had 5 or 6 inside 50s. He's averaged, and he's kicked a goal a game. I mean, there's not many players in the comp. There's players that are winning more footy, but there's not many players that are as impactful. And when you've got that, he was in a team with a two-win season, but still took steps forward. Mm. And now there's a little bit more happening around him, and we're going to see the best of him. You were suggesting that someone would play like Lee Matthews. It's not him.
Oh,
it?
No, it's not him. I think Nick Dacos's low center of gravity is Lee Matthews-esque. From what I've seen, you know, Lee Matthews, the vision you see, he picks the ball up and he's able to sort of spin in a phone box, and he doesn't lose his feet. I'm not suggesting they're the same player, but there's
a bit hippie as well.
Lee Matthews qualities. Nick, they would be about the same height, I imagine. Perhaps Nick's a little bit taller, but their agility, low centre of gravity, and the ability to not fall over was who I was likening to Lee Matthews. It's a big call, I know. But Luke Davies, UNIAC, 6 Brownlow votes already. And can I just add Nick Larkey? Because I was looking at his numbers on Friday, and he'd either kicked big bags or it wasn't much after that. The in-between stuff, I see. He's got to bridge the gap between, I want to see some twos and some threes from Larkey. When he's not kicking fives and sixes, it can't be one or none. So to then see him back it up after 6 in round 1, go on a tough road trip against a very good defence and kick 4, big tick for him as well. So the buck stop here was for Tyre Power, tipping winners on tyre safety all season.
Kane and Bucks.
And eventually the umpires picked out a shepherding free kick, but it doesn't matter. The Sydney Swans come away with an 81-point victory at the SCG to continue their strong start to season 2023.
Yeah, extraordinary scenes here.
Is that 2 weeks in a row?
That's 2 weeks in a row that our man has thrown to his own commentary. Coxie is just unbelievable scenes.
Unapologetic about that, it as well.
Good on him. He's a rising gun behind the microphone. That audio, thanks to AFL Nation. And that was how Sydney Swans got it done. Good morning if you're just waking up to us this morning. Kane and Bucks with you before Jared Waitley takes over. Still to come, questions without notice and your calls on the IMAR insurance line 1300 736 736. But the coach of the team that is on top of the ladder after only 2 games joins us. His name is John Longmire. John, thanks so much for joining us again.
No worries. G'day, Kane, Bucks.
Yeah, mate.
Well, how easy is this?
Oh, you're joking, aren't you?
No, you must be impressed, though. In all seriousness, I know you get asked so often about the grand final and the potential for that to impact your season, and for those that have suffered significant grand final defeats before, it can do that, but it doesn't appear that's the case at all, and the way that you've addressed it in the off-season must be pleasing for you.
Yeah, I mean, I've been asked about it a few times, but, you know, it happened 6.5 months ago, Kane, and we don't sort of, don't live in the past. I mean, we addressed it last year. It was a long time ago, and we put it to bed well before Christmas, so we needed to to move on and get stuck into the new year and focus on what we can do rather than what we could have done and look forward. And that's what we've been doing. And taking another step forward with our players and they've started the season in good form, which is terrific to see.
One of those is Logan McDonald, and the analysis would say that he performs better when Lance Franklin isn't in the team. Now, I don't know if that is accurate. That's the perception, and Lance wasn't there yesterday, and he kicks five. How will you go about the debate of whether those two can play together or how much Logan should play without him and how much Buddy plays? I know, once again, you get asked about this a lot.
Yeah, we won't get caught up in the debate about it because it's about actually what we see happening inside the footy club. And I mean, we last week I thought he could have kicked four, maybe even five if he'd taken some marks. He just dropped some easy ball up there in really slippery conditions up in the Gold Coast. But other than that, he would have come home with a reasonable haul, we thought, last week too. I just think he's going to keep evolving. When Lance plays, he gets the best defender. Lance gets the best defender. Logan's not, gets another one. So those sort of things come into it. There's never a situation where you have one player out and one player in, and it just works seamlessly. You know that there's going to be a period a natural handover period that's always going to happen, and we don't expect Logan to be Lance Franklin. Far from it. But we know that Logan's going to be a good player for us, and we've seen that. He played 17 games last year, and he started the season well this year.
And Marty's the other one. I mean, you just found another one. I think it was game number 13. He took 9 marks in the first half and had about, he'd kicked 4 and missed a couple of others that he probably should have kicked before you subbed him out. Firstly, was he subbed out for injury-related reasons? And, how are you going to fit all these forwards in? Because McLean's the other one. Reed didn't play.
Yeah, I mean, we actually had a few injuries to our key forwards over the pre-season. Logan was the only one that was standing up. All the others had a limited pre-season. And so we planned on going into the game yesterday to, if we got to three-quarter time, we hadn't lost anyone injury-wise. It would have been good for to Joel to get to three-quarter time and then sub him off. And that's what happened. He's fine. That was a loose plan before we went into the game. And it has a way it's working its way through. I said last night after the game that these things work its way through. It's sort of something that tends to have a way of finding its own level. And I'm sure that'll be the case again this year.
Geez, you would have been flat as a former key forward, being subbed out after you've got 4. You would have been eyeing off 8. Horse, what have you done?
We actually spoke. That's a good point. I would have been kicking and screaming. But we did talk about it before the game, and so he understood. He understands that the last thing he needs is another injury. So he hasn't had a pre-season really with us for 5 years. So we're conscious of that, and we're conscious that he can play, as we saw yesterday in the first half. That he can, when he's up and about, he's a big lader. He can get his hands to the ball and create a great contest. So we want to give him the best chance we can.
Does a Swans player need to earn his rights to get midfield minutes? Errol Goulden played a little bit more through legitimate inside mid and centre bounces this year?
Yeah, not necessarily, Bucks. I mean, it depends on how they're going. I mean, we know he can play in midfield. Mm. We've known that from the very start. But just with the balance of our team, what the rest of the midfield looked like, that he was really suited to the half-forward wing role, and he's such a real threat around goals and sets the goals up that, you've got to go with him. You've got to have a smart player on him. You can't just let him go. So, that's been part of the evolution of our team. We put him in the midfield there a couple of weeks ago, and he was terrific. He's going to be, he's just a very good two-way player. He gets up and down the ground. He uses the ball really well, and he's smart. For a three-year player, he's one of the ones I turn to a bit on the bench, and he knows his footy, which is great to have in a young player.
You mentioned two-way player there, and I've got to say, competing against the Sydney Swans for, two or three decades, either as a player, as a coach, it's definitely your DNA. You're contested ball players, but also hard runners up and back. You play the game with integrity. What is the balance of developing your list and performance in your role? Where do you reckon, in terms of a percentage, like to to build players up so they're good enough versus making it the most of it when you get to the pointy end. Where do you think the senior coach's role is in those two areas?
Yeah, I guess I see myself doing both and trying to do both all the time, no matter where you are on the ladder. Always trying to give your players the best possible chance to win and compete at the pointy end, but also understanding that young players coming through need an opportunity and can help you win. Often they bring that enthusiasm to the team and really regenerate your older players. So I try and do both. In short, I guess you don't always get it right. Sometimes you make mistakes and you don't actually get the balance absolutely correct. But try and do both as we go through, and then hopefully as you go through, you learn and you find some uncover some gems, I guess, on the way through that you can, Chad Warner being one of them, that's come into the team and start to really, really fire for us. So I try and do both, but don't always get it right.
And I presume leadership's a big part of that. And Callum Mills and the way that he's come, I mean, he's always been talented. He's become a Swans player in your image, in the club's image, but his leadership just seems to continue to go strength to strength.
Yeah. I mean, he's from the moment he came through as a young kid, you knew he was just a standout. In that regard, he's, as you say, I mean, leadership is so important, and he's come through under a system with Jared McVay and Kieran Jack, and seen those guys come through, and then Luke Parker, Dane Rampey, and making sure that you're never the finished product. As you know, as a leader, you're always working on things, and he's always working on things, but he's got a great balance in how he's going about it, and gives himself the best possible chance to play well.
Buck spoke a little bit earlier, John, about the role of the modern day quarterback, essentially the sixth defender who doesn't necessarily worry about an opponent and he's an attacking weapon. How do you combat that if the opposition has a Nick Dacos or someone of that ilk, Dan Rioli?
Yeah, I mean, last year we used Ryan Clark in that role a number of times, so it's if we're trying to combat that, I guess that's what we did last year, but every year is a different year. And, there's different, you go into the season with thoughts and plans, but you also go in with eyes wide open and flexible sort of understanding of what the game could give you, both as an opposition sense, but also what their players are doing on the way through. It may change this year. I'm not too sure. We'll sort of see how we go with that, and we can make changes on the run if required. I mean, at the moment, we had Nick Blakey yesterday have a run with Roll. He got tagged early in the game, but we were really happy with how Ollie Florent went, and obviously Braden Campbell and Jake Lloyd, those type of guys down back, to be able to fill that role. So it's handy when you have a couple of them. Obviously we saw Dacos last week, he's just an extraordinary talent. Very few have got the talent that he has.
Horsey, the trends in the game over the last sort of 5-6 years are, less in and under, less stoppage, less tackle attempts, and more transition. You made the decision to play a more expansive offense and to play faster a couple of years back. How did that come about? Was it personnel driven, or were you looking at trends in the game and made the decision that, we need to be here in 2 or 3 years? What was the catalyst?
Oh, a bit of both, Bucks. We sat down and after we came off the first year of the hub and had a lot of injuries. We only won the 5 games. We had a lot of our senior players injured, and we sat down and worked through it in about a 3 or 4 week period. We had a sort of coaches got together, and we got some new staff on board, which is terrific. And we sort of went through our style and tried to pull it apart and put it back together again. And just as players do, and they keep reassessing what they're doing every year, we need to do that as coaches as well. And step back and say, okay, where's the game going? What do we need to do to keep moving with it? And make some changes. And we did that, and we were really fortunate to get Don Pike in, Ben Matthews. Got a couple of other coaches from other clubs that saw things a bit differently, which is always handy, a fresh set of eyes. And so then we sat down and worked through that, and our personnel was coming along at a different rate as well. So, you've got to keep moving in this game. If you stand still, you sort of get swallowed up pretty quickly. So, we did that, and we were really fortunate that our players really, you know, bought into that as well.
I'm on the outside looking in now, mate. We make opinions or make judgments. So what's a premiership worth? We were talking about Bevo. And yours was in 2012. And Chris Scott's was in 11 before last year. As hungry as ever in your role and for, you know, making the most of what you got now with what you have now with a young group?
Yeah, I think, Bucks, I've been in the role a while, and I have to keep evolving too, and you know, not only the game plan, I've got to keep evolving the way I coach, and I think I coach a bit differently than what I did when I started, which I needed to do, but I think I had the same sort of foundations, and you've got to have some strong, solid foundations that you believe in, and hopefully your playing group believe in, and you know, I'm being really enthused, as you mentioned, by the younger group. You know, the young fellas, the great thing about coaching is that you get a whole new batch of 18-year-olds in every year. And that just reignites your players, reignites your staff, reignites the coaches. They've all got their own little nuances, which make them great fun. And I've certainly felt with that with this group coming through. They're really, really fun to coach.
Already reports about Tom De Koning and Sydney offering him 8 years. John, how involved are you in list management and targeting players from other clubs?
I'm on the list management committee. We've got a whole number of people that are on that. And so you're a part of any of those discussions. But as far as commenting on any players, we don't do it. I've never done it since I've been coach, and I won't do it. I won't get involved in it.
It was still worth a try, though. Can you give me that?
No, mate.
Outstanding start to the season. You're always generous with your time. We appreciate it, and for you joining us here on SEN Breakfast this morning. Good luck this week.
Good morning, boys. Good talking to you.
Huge game. Melbourne taking on Sydney MCG 3:20 in that marquee national time slot. John Longmire there. Get the best deal possible on your home mortgage that could save you thousands. Visit checkyourrate.com.au.